And chapter 7 told us about the self, para and apara vidya, jnanam, vijnanam, the four kinds of people that turn towards him, four kinds that do not, which one is his favorite, etc., etc. But chapter 8 is a little bit of a digression from that topic. The thread of chapter 7, he will pick up in chapter 9. So actually 9 is a continuation of from 7 onwards. When we go to chapter 9, then we'll see how it is. So 8, suddenly he put forth these new terms, which he had never said before. And he actually made a statement that those who know these terms at the end of their life, prayana kale hi vichar, prakarshena yana, means the final departure, at the time of final departure, then they will come to me. That is what he said. So obviously, Arjuna is going to ask, what do those terms mean? And that's exactly what he does. And therefore, excuse me, chapter 8 starts with a question by Arjun. Two questions by Arjun, actually. The first two are questions, and then Bhagwan will answer all the questions that he has. Atha ashtamodhyayah Arjuna vacha kim tad brahma kim adhyatmam kim karma purushottama adhibhutam cha kim proktam adhidaivam kim uchate adhiyajna katham kotra dehesmin madhusudana prayana kale cha katham neyosi niyatatma bihi. Arjun said, what is that Brahman? Kim tad Brahma? What is the Adhyatma? All these terms Bhagwan has already used in the last two verses in chapter 7. Okay, it is not coming from Arjuna's head. It is a continuation of what Bhagwan himself said in the previous two verses. What is action? O best among men, what is declared to be Adhibhuta and what is Adhidaiva said to be? When and how is Adhiyajna here in this body, O destroyer of Madhu? And how at the time of death are you to be known by the self-control? So there are six questions here. Brahma, Adhyatma, Karma, Adhibhutam, Adhidaivam, Adhiyajna. And then he added one more. So seven. The six terms were used by Bhagwan up to Adhiyajna. But then the last line of the second verse, Arjun has himself added. So he says, prayana kale, and we will see that. So seven questions are there and Bhagwan will answer all seven questions one by one in the same order. Arjuna means straightforward. Arjanat Arjun, that is the break of that word, straightforward. So being a very straightforward person, these questions are very straightforward. They're not, they're not to see how much Bhagwan knows and or to show what he knows. Nothing like that. It's a straightforward curiosity. Bhagwan has introduced new terms and they were not previously told or explained. Arjun also, one meaning of Arjun is tree, and a tree is usually very straight. And so Arjun also is, that's why it's a very straightforward person. Okay, so the questions are pretty simple. What is Brahman? Adhyatma, action, and then Adhibhuta, Adhidaiva, and Adhiyajna. Last seventh question is Prayana Kale. Again, Prayana, Prakarshena Yana. So at the time of death, this is final death of the body. How does one come to know? How does one know you? But that one, the person is qualified by the word Niyata, Niyata Atma Bihi. Means not any person, but one, a person who has lived his life controlling the mind. That is the qualifying word there. It is not like any, how does anybody remember you? Not like that. Suppose a person has lived a life with very control of the mind, control of the senses, etc., etc., then how does he know you? So Bhagwan starts answering. The questions are pretty straightforward. There's not much of an explanation. And Bhagwan answers them in the order that they were asked. So the verse 3, he answers the first three terms, Brahma, Adhyatma, and Karma. That is how it's going. Kim tad Brahma, kim Adhyatma, and kim Purushottama. So the first line of the first verse, he's explaining in verse number 3, shloka number 3. శ్రీ భగవాన్ ఉవాచ అక్షరం బ్రహ్మ పరమం స్వభావోధ్యాత్మ ఉచ్యతే భూత భావోద్భవ కరోస్ విసర్గ భూత భావో భవ కరః విసర్గ కర్మ సన్నితః. బ్రహ్మన్ ఇస్ ద ఇంపెరిషబుల్ ద సుప్రీం. ఓకే, కిం తద్ బ్రహ్మ? ఆన్సర్, బ్రహ్మ ఇస్ ద ఇంపెరిషబుల్ ద సుప్రీం. His essential nature is called self-knowledge. Svabhava adhyatma uchyate. The offering, the creative force that causes beings to spring forth into manifestation is called work. So we have to now understand the terms aksharam, brahma. All terms have to be understood. So let us begin with aksharam. We start with first. Kshara, that which decays, that which has disease. Kshati iti kshara. So akshara, opposite of kshara, that which does not decay, imperishable. What is imperishable in this world? Now, because Brahma is imperishable, what is the meaning of imperishable? Aksharam, imperishable is Om, the word Om. Okay, now when you see Om, it consists of three syllables, A, U and Ma. A, U and M, if we take the English listening, A and U are vowels and M is a consonant. So it consists of vowels and consonant. And therefore, in our Aksharamala, in our Varnamala or alphabets, and if you take it in English, it will be simple. We have 26 alphabets and there are consonants and then there are vowels, five vowels, and the rest are consonants. So Om becomes a representation of all the alphabets because it has a consonant and this thing. This is how Om is to be understood. See, the question is, what did Bhagwan say? Is that those who know these words at the time of death. So the knowing, the understanding has to be very correct. Yeah, I know the word also. So tomorrow I die, Brahma I say. That doesn't make, that is not what Bhagwan means. That means the full understanding has to be there. Therefore, we have to understand this carefully. Now, A, U, Ma representing all the alphabets. If you take the names in this world, all the names, the entire, you know, Webster's dictionary, it has got nothing other than the 26 alphabets. All words are only a permutation and combination of the alphabets from A to Z. So Om, therefore, representing all the 26 alphabets, it actually represents all the names in the entire world. Because no name can be beyond the gamut of the alphabets. There's nothing before A and there's nothing after Z. So everything is falling under that, into those alphabets. All the names are falling under those alphabets. And every name has to have a form. There cannot be a name which will not bring a form to your mind. So first there is the form and a name is given. A table, a chair, a computer, whatever. So whenever any word is used, a form is formed in your mind. So the names then represent all the forms. Because if there is a name, there has to be a form. Otherwise that name is not going to. If I say Chiripiti, what does that mean? Doesn't mean anything. So it has to have a form associated with it. And therefore, Om represents the entire gamut of names. And in that are included all the forms. Now, the world is nothing but names and forms. If you look at the world, right? Wall, photograph, computer, table, calculator, paper, book. No matter what you're looking at the world, there are these forms, different forms, and every form has a name of its own, and therefore the world is nothing but names and forms, and therefore Om represents the entire world. That's why Om Upasana has been given in Kathopanishad, Prashnopanishad, Mandukya Upanishad. All of them say Om. Okay, then now if a form is destroyed, because in Hindi and Marathi also, can you just excuse me for a second? There's something on my glass. A possible. Yeah. So if a form is destroyed, that name gets destroyed. Suppose if this computer doesn't work anymore, and then I just throw it out, and then I bring a laptop or something. So the form is gone, the name, computer name along with it is gone. But even if the form and name is gone, is anything happening to the alphabets? Are the alphabets getting destroyed? Alphabets are not getting destroyed. They remain no matter what happens to the form, because the minute the form is destroyed, the name is destroyed, but are the alphabets getting destroyed? They are not. And that's why for alphabets in Marathi, Hindi, and Sanskrit, the word akshara is used. The alphabets never get destroyed. They will always remain. They are the substratum for the names. And then the name becomes, it has a form associated with it. And this is the entire world. And therefore it is called aksharam. Now, so Om represents this world. In chapter 7, Bhagwan said, I have two prakritis, my higher prakriti and my lower prakriti. And the lower prakriti, upper prakriti, he said, is this Ashtadha Prakriti, which is made up of the eight aspects, which is the world, right? So Om represents his lower prakriti. Then in between the Om, in Mandukya Upanishad this comes, Om not only represents the upper prakriti, it also represents the para prakriti, because in between the silence is the Sturiya state. And therefore, this Om Upasana, when Om Upasana is done, you chant Om, 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 but then your mind has to shift to the silence between the two Oms. The silence represents the higher prakriti, para prakriti, and the Om, the sound Om, represents the lower prakriti, and it is akshara. This is the meaning of this word akshara. Okay. Another aspect of Om is A represents the waking state, U represents the dream state, and Ma represents the deep sleep state. So it represents these three states which we are very aware of, and the silence represents the Turiya state. So Om representing the entire world is what? Nothing but the three states. We experience the world in these three states, waking, very well identifying with the world, dream, partial identification, deep sleep, not much identification, but in the morning we know we slept well. So between these, the other thing about Om is the sound there are, you know, when you utter sounds, there are three points in our mouth from where we utter sounds. One is from the base of the throat. One is from the talu, what is called the palate, the upper part of the thing. And the third is from the lips. All alphabets are, they are either uttered from the base or the middle of the mouth or the lips. So A comes from the base of the mouth. U comes from the lips, means you cannot utter the alphabet U without using your lips. And Ma comes from the middle. And therefore, A, U, and M represent all the sound, because no matter what sound you utter, it has to come from these three points only. So A coming from the base, U coming from the lips, M coming from the middle, it represents the entire gamut of sound. It represents the entire gamut of the alphabets. Therefore, entire gamut of names. Therefore, all forms. But at the same time, if the form is destroyed, the name will get destroyed with it, but the alphabets will not go anywhere. The alphabets remain. Alphabets remain. So it's akshara. So Om itself, therefore, Kathopanishad says, Om is the goal and Om is the means to reach that supreme reality. The idea is that this word Brahma, see the word Brahma, Aksharam, Brahma, Paramam. So Aksharam and Paramam are the adjectives that Bhagwan has given to Brahma. So what is Brahma? Brahma is Aksharam. It's imperishable. Means at the last time of departure, if the word Brahma comes to my mind, I must understand it as imperishable And I must be very fixed in that thought. I must not have any doubt. And that's why we have to understand how it is becoming imperishable and as supreme. And we'll see what supreme means as well. If I have that understanding, then it is the correct, not Brahma means Brahma Bharadwaj, some actor or some Brahma name, not Brahmaji, the creator. If somebody says Brahma and then Brahmaji, the creator comes to my mind, then that is not correct. That is not what Bhagwan means. Therefore, we must understand these words as he means it. And this is what he means. So it is Aksharam. It is imperishable. And that is Om. So if we do Om Upasana, then at the time of death, we will come to know. The word Brahma comes from, the break of that word is Brahatvat Brahma. Brahatvat means that which is big. So we have to understand what means big. Because if you ask an ant, ant will say elephant is big. If you ask elephant, it'll say mountain is big. If you ask mountain, something else will be big. Then what is the definition of big? All these big things that we see, no matter how big they are, they have a limitation. So the definition of big becomes that which has absolutely no limitation. Now, what are the limitations that we experience? Because we have to go from known to unknown. So if I look at myself, then what are the limitations that I have? First limitation I have is space, limitation of space. And limitation of space means that if now I'm sitting in this room, then I'm not in the rest of my house. I am in Vancouver, I'm not in Calgary. I'm in Vancouver, I'm not in India, I'm nowhere else. So now I am limited by space. Okay, that is limitation of space. Then I'm also limited by time because I think that I was born on this day and I know that on this day, on one day, someday I'll be gone. So that is a limitation by time. When the existence is only from this period to this period, or I can say, you know, there was a time when I could drive very well or I could do something very well and now I can't. So it's a limitation of time. And the third limitation that I know of is limitation of objects. Limitation of objects means if I am here, then nothing else can be in this space. I can hold the book in my lap, but then it is in my lap. It is not in the same space that I am. So where I am, the computer is not. Where the computer is, I am not. Where the table is, I am not. And so the table, the computer are limiting me. I am limiting the computer. And that is a limitation of objects. So there is limitation by space, time, and objects. So if we want to say big, then that big must not be limited by space, time, or objects. So Brahma, Brahatvat Brahma, that's why it's called Brahma, big, because it is not limited by these three things. It is not limited by space because it is all pervading. It is like saying, you know, space itself is all pervading, we say, right? But this Brahma should be understood as being beyond space. It is Brahma is that which is holding space. That is how it is to be understood. So it is not limited by space because it is everywhere. I said, I'm here. That's why I'm not in Calgary. But as the Supreme Consciousness, as Brahma, I am here. I'm in Calgary. I'm in all other rooms. I'm in entire Vancouver, Canada, universe, solar systems, black hole, white hole, everywhere. So I do not have a limitation of space. Brahma does not have a limitation of space. Time is not limited by time. Why? Because it's beginningless. It was not born. We saw in chapter 2, not born, no death. So there is no limitation on account of time. There is also no limitation on account of objects because the pure consciousness, the supreme consciousness is in and through the creation. It is like a cloth which has vertical and horizontal threads. It is both vertical and horizontal. And if there is a diagonal thread, that is also the supreme consciousness. It is in, we cannot say that the computer is here, so there is no consciousness. It is in the form of existence, right? So in and through every inert object, in and through every human being, every animal, every tree, every rock, every mineral, everything, it is pervading. It is pervading through all the objects. And therefore, it does not have a limitation by object. We cannot say computer is here, so consciousness is not. I can say I computer is here, so I am not, but not Brahma. And that is the meaning of Brahma. That is how we have to understand this word Brahma, which is Brahman also. Sometimes in Upanishads it's called Brahman, but this is the same Brahma. It is not Brahmaji. It is not to be understood as the creator, Brahmaji. It is to be understood as the supreme consciousness, the reality. Okay. Then another word he has qualified, Paramam. What does Paramam mean? Paramam means supreme. But what is meant by supreme? You know, if you take in ordinary parlance, you know, we say that even starting just from our own family, I was thinking about this, and my mom never worked, right? My dad worked. So he was the one that was supporting the family. So kind of he was supreme in the family. You know, the one who is supporting. Idea is the one who supports. So if you go into, you know, government, into higher this thing, then the ministers, they are supporting. And then the prime minister is the one. So prime ministers are supreme, then prime minister is supreme. Then maybe president is above that, or maybe the president of some other country is above that. So that which is supporting, if you think of Paramam as this definition, then if you think what is it that is supporting this entire universe, it's only Brahma. As the existence principle, in and through the creation is supported by this principle of existence, consciousness, bliss. And therefore, it is known as Paramam. So that is how these words have to be understood. Aksharam, Brahma, Paramam. Okay? Now, Swabhava Adhyatma Uchate. Uchate, it is said. It is said that Adhyatma is Swabhava. Now, Swabhava word, if you hear in, I don't know, those who know Marathi or those who know Hindi, Swabhava means nature. So we say his nature is compassionate. He's very compassionate. He's very kind. He's a very angry person. You know, nature, we take it as nature. Swabhav. His swabhav is very mean, or his swabhav is very good. Like that we say, this is not how this swabhav is to be understood. So here this swabhava has two syllables, swa and bhava. Swa means self and bhava means existence. So that which is existing through these bodies is what Adhyatma is. Now the question is, what is it that is existing through the body? Means, what do I think? When I say I speak, when you say you're listening, the class is going on, who is speaking? What is my idea of who is speaking? It is this superimposition that I have done. It is the reflection of consciousness. In ordinary terms, it is the Jivatma. Okay, consciousness reflects. We have not done Drig Drish Vivek, but we have done Atma Bodh, right? If you remember Atma Bodh, in Atma Bodh, there was an example that was given. There is a dark room. Suppose there is a very, very dark room and the sunlight cannot go into it directly, but the room needs to be lit. So what they do is, outside there is sunlight, but it cannot enter that room somehow. So they put a bucket of water outside the door. The sun reflects in the water, and that reflected light enters the room and the room gets lit. That is the phenomena that is happening within us as well. The consciousness, pure consciousness, is not directly functioning through individual bodies. Its reflection is happening in the subtle body. The reflection of the pure consciousness happens in the subtle body, which is the mind, intellect, and the subtlest part of the mind, intellect, and memory is the ego. So the reflection actually happens in the ego, and that reflected light is what is enlivening the body. And therefore the body can speak and run and walk and talk and, you know, move hands and legs and everything. So this swabhava, that which is existing through the body, is referring to that reflection. So it is referring to the reflected consciousness, which in ordinary terms we call as jiva or jivatma. And what I think is, this jivatma is illusory. Does a reflection have any reality of its own? It can't. It is dependent on the medium and is dependent on the object. either the medium can be removed and the reflection will go, or the object can be removed and the reflection will go. So the reflection does not have any real identity, and yet I think that I am real and I am really speaking and I am really taking this class and doing all kinds of things. So what it is a superimposition on the supreme reality. So Adhyatma, Aksharam Paramam Brahma is the supreme reality, and Adhyatma should be understood as a superimposition on that reality. Okay, which is Jivam, which is an illusion. And right now, though, I do feel it is very real. So I must understand all these things have to come to my mind at the time of death. Okay, so I must understand that actually what is dying is only the body, and I am actually not dying. If that thought, and it will only come if I'm established in that thought. Otherwise, suddenly it will not come. That's why you have to study. Okay, so this is what is meant by Adhyatma. This is what he means by Swabhava, self in the existing in the self, through the self. Now, question is, he said, he told us the reality. He told us what the superimposition is. Now he describes karma. Karma sagnitaha means is said. So karma is defined as bhuta, bhava, udabhava, karaha, visarga. That break of that word, or the first word in the second line is bhuta, bhava, then udbhava, karaha, visarga. So there are that five words in there. Bhuta means beings. And here bhuta, beings, we do not include animals because animals do not have a choice of living. Okay, they live by instinct. It is only the human beings who have the faculty of subtle intellect, the faculty of choice. I can choose to do or not do a certain thing. Animals don't have that choice. They will go on living by instinct. For example, a cow will never say, oh, I'm getting very weak. Let me have some eggs for breakfast every day. She won't. She will only have grass because she's programmed by nature. And therefore, Buddha, therefore Bhagavad Gita is meant for human beings only. It is not meant for animals. So Buddha here represents the beings, the human beings. Bhava, again, existence. Like we saw in Swabhava, so Bhuta Bhava, the existence of the beings. Udbhava Kara, Uda is above. It becomes Uda because of the, because of Sandhi. But the word is Uta. Uta means above. Okay, above, rising. Bhavakara means that which will make the beings go up. Right. A literal translation I'm telling you first, huh? Which will make you go. And visarga means, visarjanam means giving up. So karma he's describing as giving up. Okay, this it goes like Urdu. Sanskrit always goes like that. So karma is defined as a giving up which will raise the existence of the beings, of the human beings. Visarga, the word we hear, visarjanam, most common in Ganpati festival. You know, Lord Ganesha is invoked and then we do visarjanam of the idol in the ocean. Giving up. Visarga means giving up, basically. In the Vedic times, in the previous times, they used to have the whole Vedas, out of the four parts, the bulkiest part is Karmakanda. And in that Karmakanda, I've told you, there are many, many, many rituals which are done with the fire, you know, and you go on offering oblations for getting whatever that you desire. If we look at Sri Rama's father, he did Putra Kameshti Yajna, right? He wanted sons, so he did that. Draupadi's father also did that. In Kathopanishad, we say Nachiketa's father wanted to do this Homa to go to the heavens. So the point is that in that Karmakanda, there is a ritual for every desire that you want in this material world. You want heaven, you want son, you want daughter, you want rain, you want these, that, everything. And for that, the person who has these desires, he is now giving up. What he's giving up is those oblations. So ghee, all kinds of grains, all that, you know, we go on putting it in the fire, we go on putting it in the fire, in that Agni. So that is one visarga, and that will raise his, means raise him, means because obviously he's asking desire to be happy. Obviously he's asking for something, either he's asking for money or whatever, progeny, whatever. So he will. Question is that what Bhagwan is meaning here? That is the question. It can't. Bhagwan cannot mean that. Because this type of visarga that is done in the Havan and all is for material prosperity. And obviously the Bhagavad Gita is not being told for Arjuna. He had material prosperity. There was nothing more to gain in that. So visarga here then means, this raising means a spiritual evolution. Karma is that by which, is that giving up because of which there will be spiritual evolution of the human beings. Now, so then how is karma, what should be given up? Karma is to be done in duality. What do I give up for spiritual evolution is doership before karma and enjoyership after karma. So when he uses the word karma, he actually means karma yoga. Because in that, there is a giving up. There is a giving up of the ego. There is a giving up of the doership. The notion that I am the one that is doing. The notion that I am the one that is going to enjoy. Okay? So this doership and enjoyership, when it is given up, then Bhagwan says it becomes karma. Now, if we take all these three together, first, the reality. The supreme reality has been explained, Brahma. Then Adhyatma as the superimposition. Adhyatma is the superimposition. Question is, okay, there is the reality and the superimposition has happened. How do I de-superimpose karma? Karma yoga. So this, just one verse, if we can focus on and follow, there will be liberation. I've told you, you don't need all 700 verses of the Gita for liberation. All you need is one. Any one verse you pick and you focus on that and you follow that to a T, like, you know, absolutely you follow it, it will take you to liberation. Just this one verse. This is a very, very important verse. Understand what the reality is. Understand what superimposition is happening and separate that. The separation of the ego from the jiva, from the supreme reality, is what is meant by de-superimposition. How do I de-superimpose is by purifying my mind. How do I purify my mind is by doing karma in this fashion. Why do I have to do karma? Because I have no choice but to act in this world. Because there's no choice. Okay, this is how this goes. So first three terms he has explained. Then he goes on to adibhutam kshara bhavah purushaschasti daivatam adiyajnohame vatra dehe deha bhrutambara. Adibhuta or elements constitutes my perishable nature, and the indweller or the essence is the adi daivata. I alone am the Adi Yajna here in this body, O best of the embodied. Dehe Deha Bhrutam Vara. Vara is superior, the best. And Dehe, embodied Deha Bhrutam, in embodied in this body. So he's referring to Arjuna, the last three words. And he says, Adi Bhutam Kshara Bhava. We saw Akshara in the first verse. Here we see Kshara Bhava. Kshara, that which perishes. Like Akshara, we said that which doesn't perish. So Akshara has to be that which perishes. So Adibhutam is that, he says, which perishes. So the question now arises, what is he referring to when he says that this Adibhuta is perishing? So he is referring to the entire gamut of the world. Idam. In Upadesh Sar, we saw two words, Aham and Idam. Right? Bhagwan Raman Maharshi said. So here when he says Kshara Bhavaha, it is the entire Idam. Okay. Now the Idam is very easy for us to understand, that the house, the computer, the world, all is idam. But idam also we have to understand as this body as well. That becomes very difficult. Aham, I think, is this is me, this whole thing. And then anything beyond this, okay, that I even if somebody tells me clothes are idam, I'm comfortable with it. Yes, clothes are not me, clothes. But when it comes to actually the body, then it becomes very difficult. When we are told that body also is not aham, which I think right now, body is aham, and everything beyond my body is idam. I can understand that. So what needs to be understood here, adhibhutam, is that the body, mind, and intellect also is not aham, it is idam. Because it is seen. Understand that the body is seen. Therefore, it is false. Anything that is seen is false. Yad drisham tad jadam, yad jadam tad nashwaram, yad nashwaram tad mithya. That is the axiom. So if you see anything, know it to be inert, jadam. If it is inert, it is going to perish. If it perishes, it is mithya. We don't call it false, we call it mithya, because false is that which never existed at all, like the horns on a rabbit. It never existed. So that is false. But the body, but the world, the forms, the names, at one point in time, they do exist. We cannot say that the body does not exist at all. I'm seeing the body. I'm using the body for things. So body is experienced at one point, but at some other point, it is not going to be experienced. I see my body is very easy to understand, but also remember that I also see my thoughts. And the causal body, which is the vasanas, at some point, right now, I may not know what vasanas I have. So it is, I can say, oh, is that is not seen. But at some point, it will get seen when that vasana will become a thought and come into the mind. So at that point, it will become seen. So whatever is seen is inert, and inert is perishing. So what needs to be understood here is that the aham that I think right now, that is also idam. And that is adhibhutam. Therefore, this adhibhuta will perish. At some point in time, it will always perish. One thing to understand about this adhibhuta is, like I told you, in the world, there's names and forms. There's forms and there's names. And the form goes and the name goes, but nothing happens to the alphabet. So if you go to the source, nothing happens. So if you take the body, not as a body, but if you remember that the body is coming out of the five elements, tattva bodh. Remember how this world was created? First space and air and fire, water, earth. And from the sattvic elements came the mind and the sense organ. And from the tamasic, from the rajasic elements came the pranas. And then from the tamasic element came the body, right? Everybody's body, plants, animals, and humans. So if the body is looked upon as a conglomerate of five elements, the elements never get destroyed. So in actuality, in absolutely the highest sense, really nothing is getting destroyed. But it is perishable. It has disease, it decays. But as the elements, it doesn't decay. The elements never decay. When the body dies, fire, the heat merges with fire, the air merges with air, water merges with water, space merges with, and these five elements at the time of pralaya, they go unmanifest in the supreme reality. So they really never get destroyed, and then they are brought forth at time of creation. So that is what adhibhutam is to be understood as. Adhibhutam kshara bhavaha. Purusha is adi daivatam. Now this is to be understood very clearly. Purusha means what? In Kathopinishad, if we study, then Purusha is the supreme Purusha. Then what? Again, same. Brahma. Brahma already you said is supreme reality. Now, Adi Daivata is also Purusha only. So this Purusha has to be understood very well. And to understand that, we should understand a little bit of the creation. So what this Purusha is referring to, Purishayana Titi Purushaha. The Sankhyans, they have a definition of Purusha of their own. Our own Upanishad also, at some points, the supreme reality has been referred to as Purusha. So obviously, it cannot be the supreme reality because the supreme reality has already been explained in Brahma. So again, Adi Bhutam, Adi Daivatam cannot be that. See, when the creation happens, we have seen there's pure consciousness, which is absolutely the non-doer. Maya is invoked. And that Maya, then it becomes Ishvara. And Ishvara is the total causal body. And when a thought comes in the mind of Ishvara that I should create, the total subtle body is known as Hiranyagarbha. Right? Remember this, is, we have studied this, right? Pure consciousness plus Maya is Ishvara. Ishvara's total mind is, Ishvara is total causal body. Then the mind is Hiranyagarbha, total subtle body. And from Hiranyagarbha comes Virat, which is the total gross body, right? We have the individual Pradnya, Taijasa and Vishwa. And then we have on this side, the totality, which is Ishvara, Hiranyagarbha and Virat. Now what we have to understand about Virat is, and even science now we previously we may not have known, but now we know, they say that there is not only one sun. They say there are thousands of suns, right? So each sun has its own probably planetary system. I want to tell you science first, because when we talk about the scriptures, then we say, what is the proof? But science is saying this, and correct me if I'm wrong. So they say that now there are thousands of suns, then every sun has its own planetary system. Obviously, if they have planetary system, maybe there is life there also. We don't know. We don't have the instruments to know that. But they are saying that, right? So there are many, many solar systems. That is what science is saying. What scriptures are saying is this Virat, the total gross bodies, it has got many, many Brahmandas. Brahmandas means you can translate it as many, many solar systems. Okay? All right, so far? Okay. Each Brahmanda means each universe, I wouldn't say world, universe, each universe has its own set of Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh. See, in our earth, we say there is Brahma creator, sustainer, destroyer, right? Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. Now, pure consciousness is all pervading, only one. Okay. Ishvara is also only one. Hiranyagarbha is also only one Ishvara, so only one mind. There cannot be one Ishvara and then many minds. So there's only one mind. But this total body, in this total body, Virat, gross bodies, there are many universes. Like they say, there are many, many solar systems. All right? Each universe has its own Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. Okay? Creator, sustainer, destroyer. Each one. The Brahmaji of one universe has no control over Brahmanda number two, Brahmanda number three, four. We don't know how many there are. No control. They're separate. All right. But function of each Brahmaji in every universe is the same. So the creator Brahmaji, creator number two, creator number three, creator number four. So creator is same. Sustainer is sustainer one, two, three, four. Destroyer is also one, two, three, four. That way this is. Now, Brahmaji, the creator, is creating the beings as per what? As per our own vasanas. We have said that, right? How do I get birth? How do I get born in this particular body, in this particular womb, in this particular family, in this particular circumstance? It's because of my own actions from the past. So Brahmaji creates as per my actions, but who is providing the material for Brahmaji to create? Brahmaji is not getting the material from himself. The material for all the beings in all the Brahmandas is provided by Hiranyagarbha. I told you Hiranyagarbha is only one. Okay? Materials are only five. Space, air, fire, water, earth. There's no sixth material. So out of, this is common. The five elements coming from Hiranyagarbha is common for all the Brahmandas. But the Brahmaji of each Brahmanda is different, different, different. And he creates with them, like, you know, see Ganesh, we said Visarga Ganesh festival, right? Clay is there. Now, out of the clay, they make the idol of Ganesh also, and they make the mouse also, same clay. Then the Modak, you know, they will make same clay. So material is the same, but as per our vasanas, we will become a mouse or Ganeshi or Modak or rope in his hand or what. That is as per our karmas. But the material that is going, and the material is not bound by vasanas. Please understand. Space, air, fire, water, that is, it has got, there is material. They've got nothing to do with anybody's vasanas, but they can be molded as per the person's vasanas. So if the person's vasanas are, I want to sleep all day, then they can become, they can be molded into, fashioned into a cat. They can be fashioned into a pig. If I want like 50, 60 children, if that's what my wish is, then okay, then pig body. And same material. So just as the clay can be fashioned into a mouse, into the Ganesh, the idol, or, you know, his base, they make a seat for him. That is also coming out of clay only. Modak is also coming out of clay. The rope is coming out of clay. His ornaments also are coming out. They make out of clay some necklace and they put on the neck. So the material is the same coming from Hiranyagarbha. And Brahmaji is then fashioning that material in different molds as per how that person has wished. Danka. Yatha Shruti Yatha Karma. This is what it is said. So Yatha Shruti means as per his vasanas and the karmas that he has done. So here, now coming back to our word here, don't think I'm digressing. Purusha is that Hiranyagarbha. So this Adi Daivata is referring, Bhagwan is referring to understand it to be Hiranyagarbha, the total mind from which all the materials have come. And therefore, we are all same and the materials are indestructible. The five elements, which is the material that is going on in the formation of the body, is indestructible. And that is what is meant by Purusha in this verse here. Purushascha cha adi daivatam. What is adi bhutam is this idam, entire idam, which is destructible. And adi daivatam is this purusha. And purusha here means Hiranyagarbha, which is the total mind and from where the five elements are coming. Okay. Adi yajna ahameva atra. Ahameva atra. I am alone. Adi yajna, he's saying. I am alone. So, what is this adi yajna? Dehe, in the body. Dehe is in the body, locative case. So, adi yajna aham eva atra dehe. In this body, I am the adi yajna. So, what he is meaning is, we saw Adhyatma as Jiva, the superimposition. But along with the Jiva, there is the individual consciousness as well within us, what we would refer to as Atma. See, Atma and Brahma, Jiva Brahma Aikya is there, right? How is that Aikya? There is the total consciousness, which is the pure consciousness, which is Brahma. Then there is a reflected consciousness, which is reflecting in the medium. But also within individual bodies is the Atma, or what is known as Kutastha. In Mundaka Upanishad, I told you, there are the two birds on the tree. The analogy of the two birds is there. One bird is pecking at the fruit and enjoying, and one bird is only witnessing. So this adi yajna aham eva atra dehe, in the body, I am only the adi yajna, it means the individual consciousness. This is what is meant by adi yajna here. Okay, which is also known as kutastha. Kutastha, kuta means the anvil. The anvil, which is, it is used by a blacksmith. So it is a piece of iron, a block of iron, upon which he heats up the iron, that metal which is there. He'll keep it on that and he'll hammer it to make it into different instruments. That is called the anvil. Or even you can understand it as the hub of the wheel. See, the spokes of the wheel are there and the wheel turns, but the hub doesn't move. It's steady. So this kutas is like, so this individual consciousness or adhiyajna is also known as kutas in technical terms. If you were to study Vedanta technically, then it would be known as kutas. That which stays unchanged. Like the two birds, one bird is only witnessing. It is the witness principle. It is called the sakshi. It is within us in the individual body. So individual self is adhiyajna and the total self is Brahma. Adhiyajna and Brahma are one and the same, but the term adhiyajna is used for the individual. Just like Atma is used for the individual self, Brahman is used for the total self. Here adhiyajna is used as adhiyajna aham eva atra dehe. O best among the embodied ones, O Arjun, this is what adhiyajna means. Okay, so we have seen in two verses, he just explained six terms. So the rest of the thing is meant for that last line, that second verse where he asked, how does the whole chapter now is going to be dedicated to that? Because he answered all the questions, right? So we will stop here today and we'll continue next time. Any questions? No questions?
Deity, I have a question.
Okay.
So it's not, I didn't understand this part. So the Jivatma is the one which is reflected consciousness?
Yes.
And the Kutastha is the individual consciousness, you said, right?
Yeah, which is the witness, which is also known as the witness consciousness or Sakshi, Kutastha or Atma. And when we understand the Mahavakyas, you know, Tattvamasi, the Tvam is you, Tat is that, right? So this you, this Tvam has to be understood as not as the Jivatma, but as the Atma. Because if you understand Tvam as Jivatma, you can never be equal to the pure consciousness.
It's different in the sense that, sorry, I didn't understand it, so I'm asking you again. So the reflected consciousness is, how is it lower than the Atman is my question.
Because reflected consciousness is only a reflection.
Okay.
It is no real reality. That's why I said reflection. Can a reflection be real?
No.
Think about it. If there is a mirror and you're standing in front of the mirror, if you remove the mirror, the reflection will be gone.
Yeah.
What reality is there to the... It is an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
It is illusory. That's why it has a lower status than Atma. Atma is for real.
Mm.
Atma, it's like this, you know, there is a pot and suppose if there is a... we say pot space.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the total space. But are we, is that pot space actually limited by the pot?
No.
Right? So the limitedness is an illusion.
Okay.
Right? So we do say adhiyajna is that individual consciousness, but we also must understand that this individual consciousness is not real also. Because why the upadhi is not real?
Correct. Okay.
Why is that? You cannot say that this is room space and this is room space is different from the total space.
Okay.
Space is space. Reality space is one only. We constructed a wall or we constructed the pot and then we started saying this. And then we start, then not only that, then we say golden pot and mud pot and brass pot and this pot and that pot, right? But is the space becoming golden or mud or anything? Space is not changing at all, right?
Okay.
So this, but Jivatma, understand Jivatma to be a reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So reflection can never have any reality.
Thank you.
There are three things. There is the Jivatma, which is reflected consciousness. Then there is the individual consciousness and there's the total consciousness. So when the Mahavakyas are used, Aham Brahmasmi, the or Tattvamasi, I am Atma Brahma, Prajnanam Brahma. Out of these four, Prajnanam, I am Atma, Aham, and Tvam. These words, they actually must be understood as the individual consciousness. When I say you, or when I say I am speaking, that I is Jivatma.
Okay.
Because Atma is the non-doer, na? Atma doesn't do anything. So Jivatma is speaking. So these words have to be understood as the individual consciousness, and then you will immediately see the oneness with the total consciousness. Otherwise, there can never be oneness between Jiva. How can there be reflection and object? How it will be same?
Yeah. Last week when you ended the chapter, you said you should meditate with formless. That's the best way of meditation, right? Last week.
Meditating on the formless.
Yeah, where you drop the form.
Drop, yeah. Highest, yeah. That would be the most subtle. Very difficult, but yeah.
But how do you do that is the thing. But Aksharam does make sense here. But still.
Yeah. If you go to the source, na, you're already going to formless. See, instead of the form, if you say that the form has come from the five elements. Now, the five elements don't have form that way. Na?
Mm.
So you can go back. Go back, go inside. Now, what we say when we say go introverted, we have to go backwards. Yeah. See, we have seen vasana, and then we have always seen that the vasana manifests in the mind as a thought.
Mm.
Yeah, so it is coming out, right? It's an outward journey. So vasana is the most subtle. It becomes manifest in the mind as a thought, and then it becomes absolutely gross as an action.
Action.
See, even in my, if a thought comes in my mind, you won't know it. But the minute I start doing action, you know, oh, okay. She started making tea. So she had the thought of tea. She had the vasana of tea. Immediately you can connect. So this introvert, being introverted means the thought has to be now made into vasana.
Mm.
So what you do is action is totally to be cut off. And that's why sitting in meditation, no action.
Mm.
That is what you do. Your karmendriyas, you put them to an end right away. You're just sitting. Sitting is an action, but it is not, you're not doing any. That's why they say you cannot do meditation up and down walking. Let me meditate while running. It's not advisable. It is not advised. It is not even advised to stand up and meditate, because standing is a rajasic position. So you come into a sattvic position and you shut the karmendriyas down and you travel backwards. So what you do is you take up a thought and you keep that thought in mind so much that it becomes a vasana. So you are going now back from vasana, you've come out. Now you go back into vasana. And therefore the thought to be meditated upon is Aham Brahmasmi.
Mm.
And you repeat that so many times, single pointedly, I mean for births and births, not so many times, that it becomes a vasana.
Mm.
And that is the journey backwards. Okay.
Lots of thinking to do.
Yeah. It is, at least we have started thinking, I think.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Jayaji, I just want to clarify what Ranjini ji and you just discussed. So Jivatma, you said, is the reflection.
Yeah.
So it's a reflected consciousness. And then individual consciousness is the, you said it's Sakshi. So is that same as the Atma?
Yes, yes. These are synonyms. Sakshi.
And total consciousness is.
Yeah. And sorry.
And the total consciousness is Brahman, which is the same as Atman.
Brahman is same as?
Atman?
Yeah. Atman is referred to individual consciousness and Brahman is referred to the total consciousness.
So that is the connection between the Atman and the Brahman.
They're same.
Yeah,
they are actually same. It's like saying pot space and total space.
Yeah.
So is it different?
No,
I say pot space. Yeah. So Atma is like the pot space and Brahman is total space. But really, there is no difference between the two spaces.
Space
is one, right? That way.
Atma, which is just a reflection of
Jivatma, is a reflection. Yes. Yes. Okay. Atma is not a reflection. Jivatma is a reflection. And okay. Jivatma is the one that feels that it is the doer, feels that it is going to enjoy. And that's why Bhagwan says that feeling, that notion, it is coming out of a false entity. It is an illusory entity that is feeling. So he says, give up the doership. So when you give up that notion, that Jivatma idea starts fading. Then the Sakshi becomes more and more manifest, and the manifestation of that, you actually come to know that you are not doing anything, things are happening around you. You actually come to know it that way. That is when you're going inwards.
And we will know we are in the Sakshi state if you are not reacting to what is happening around us. Does that make sense?
Very true. Yes.
Okay.
You respond, but don't react. Response has to be there. But with a very calm mind, then you know that you're functioning from the higher level.
Okay. And ultimately, the Sakshi state also has to go.
Yeah, because there is Sakshi. Why? What is Sakshi? Witness. When I say witness, there's something else.
It's a duality.
To witness this, otherwise what witness? If I'm, suppose now I shut the screen down, then what? I'm not witnessing you guys. I'm alone. Right now I'm a witness. I'm a witness of you. You are a witness of me because we are sitting in front of each other. So Sakshi, the word is used because all this thing is being witnessed. That bird, you know, the bird is witnessing this other bird pecking at the fruit. So Sakshi, it is called Sakshi. But actually this is an illusion. So in actuality, there is nothing like Sakshi. All this has to be understood.
Jayaji.
Yes.
You mentioned the reflection is done through the ego.
Reflection happens in the ego because it is the subtlest part of the mind intellect. Generally, we don't even separate that much when we say it happens in the mind, in the subtle body. But actually, it is happening in the ego, yeah.
So if we can dissolve the ego, what happens? It's done.
Reflection dissolves. Perfect. That is liberation. Dissolution of ego is liberation. Mm-hmm. It is only the ego that is separating us from God. You dissolve the ego, you break the mirror, the reflection disappears. What remains is only Atma, Sakshi. You will come to know that Sakshi is one with Brahman.
So a realized person, let's say they've reached that stage, but they're still alive. That ego is still around a little bit, or?
Ego is around, but it is known as Badita Ahankara. It is known as falsified ego. This is going into higher Vedanta now. So what happens for a realized person is, yes, the ego is there. But one way of understanding is that what we have is a functional ego and a psychological ego. Okay, so functional ego is the one that functions in this world. Suppose if the realized person was a cook, okay, fine. He doesn't forget the cooking part of it. But the psychological ego, which tells him, I'm such a good cook, I'm a great man, I'm a this, I'm a that, that dissolves. Okay, that is one way. So the ego is there and the reflection is happening, but he has realized that this reflection is entirely false. So the functionality remains, the realized master functionality remains. The other reason for a liberated person to be alive is that in liberation, in that final self-realization, the Sanchita and the Agami karmas get burnt, but Prarabdha karma is not burnt. Remember that there is a Prarabdha karma of the body. Okay? And that self-knowledge has no power over Prarabdha karma. It burns Sanchita. You remember Sanchita and Agami, right? The collected past karmas and Agami, the future. The self-knowledge has power over these two. It does not have power over Prarabdha karma. So whatever is the Prarabdha of the body has to undergo it. In case of a realized master, like you see, Raman Maharshi had cancer, Ramakrishna Paramahans had cancer, Raman Maharshi had surgery, Gurudev had heart problems, right? But what was their attitude? They said, this is to the body. This has got nothing to do with me. Whereas if all these things happens to me, I'll say, oh my God, I've got this, I have got that, I have got. they will say body has it, I don't. That separation has happened, which has not happened for us. One common reason, another reason for the Jivan Mukta Purusha, the liberated person to be alive, is if the prarabdha karma would end at self-realization, we would not have any examples. Think. Person realizes, dies. Person realizes, how will the other people know that there is something known as self-realization?
I thought it was the past karmas were determined prarabdha.
Yes, correct. Prarabdha is prakarshena arabdha. So past karmas determine prarabdha. A portion of the past karmas which have fructified give result to birth. So the birth has happened for the realized master. He's already born, which means he did have Sanchita karma. Part of it were fructified and those have now begun. It is like an arrow that has been shot. Vivek Churamani gives this example. Prarabdha karma is the arrow that has been shot. The arrow has to reach its destination. It cannot be cut short in the middle. So if that realized master is supposed to live another 100 years, he will live. If he's supposed to live with disease, he will live. If he's supposed to have cold and cough and health issues and whatever issues the body has to have is prarabdha, he will live. But he will in that know that this is not me. This is my body's prarabdha. Let it exhaust itself. And self-knowledge has no power over prarabdha karma. So what remains is what is known as falsified ego. And then that doesn't bind them at all. So whatever actions they do after that, they don't get bound.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So we'll close for today. We'll meet next Monday. I think we have till the 16th of December before we close for Christmas. And when we open, I'm not sure, can we open on the 6th of December? You guys talk about 6th of January and let me know. Okay? Because after New Year, I know the schools apparently, at least in BC, they're saying the schools are not starting till 13th or something. So I don't know what's it with Calgary schools, but if we can start on the 6th, that would be good. We'll close now. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om. Okay. Good night, everybody.